You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and you are very welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the Sound and beyond. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and today we're going beyond, down to Portland, to interview Willie Vlotten. Willie is an author and a musician. Well, of course, he's from Portland. And we're going to talk to him about his latest novel noir, which is called The Night Always Comes. Welcome, Willie. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, I'd like to start out today by reading a review right off your cover. And Richard Russo, author of Empire Falls and Chances Are, says about The Night Always Comes, "The trick to writing a great thriller is both simple and very, very difficult. To make us care about the person whose life is in jeopardy. I can't remember the last time I worried myself sick about a fictional character the way I did about Lynette in Willie Vlotten's terrific, big-hearted new novel, You Won't Soon Forget Her Either, or the fraught world she so courageously navigates." Well, I felt that way, too, about Lynette. And I'd like to learn more about her from you today, Willie. And maybe you could start us off by reading a little bit from the book.
Yeah, I guess I'll just jump right in. It's basically Lynette is a 30-year-old woman, and she lives with her 57-year-old mother and her 32-year-old developmentally disabled brother. And they're trying to buy the rental home that they've lived in for her whole life, 30 years. And it's a, you know, the mother and daughter is a difficult relationship, and they've kind of stuck together for the brother. And they've figured out a way to get a loan for the house. And this is a week before they're supposed to sign for the house, and Lynette gets off work and comes home. In the carport to the right of the house was a car she had never seen. A white Toyota Avalon Limited. It had no license plate, only a placard that said Toyota of Portland, and taped to the rear windshield was a white trip permit. Lynette parked on the street, got out, opened the passenger side door for her brother Kenny, and helped him from the car. They walked across the front lawn, and she stopped and looked inside the Toyota. The seats were black leather, and a clear plastic liner covered the carpeted floor. It was brand new. Inside the house, the curtains were shut and the lights were off. Their mother lay on the couch underneath the electric blanket watching TV. She sat up when they came in. "Come here and kiss your mother," she said to Kenny. He walked slowly toward her, and her hand shook slightly when she lit a cigarette, put it in her mouth, and took hold of his arm. "Sit next to me," she said, and patted the couch with her free hand. "Sit right next to Mommy." Kenny shook his head. "Once in a while you have to do what somebody else wants to do, and not what you want, so sit." She squeezed his wrist as hard as she could and pulled him down to her. He moaned but sat. Lynette set her purse and keys on the table near the front door. "Whose car is that?" Their mother didn't answer. "Jesus, it's awful out today," she said, and walked to the living room. "I don't know why you have to have it so dark in here all the time. Do you mind if I turn up the heat? At least for a little bit. Can't seem to get warm today." "Sure," the mother said. Lynette turned the thermostat up to 68. "So whose car is that? It's really nice. Is it Cheryl's? Did yours break down?" Their mother had the cigarette in her left hand and kept her right hand around Kenny's wrist. Her eyes were on the TV and her voice came out so quiet it was barely audible. "It's mine." Lynette laughed. "It's yours? Yeah, I bet." Their mother's voice grew louder, but it was now shaking. I bought it. Lynette looked at her, suddenly worried. "What do you mean you bought it? You mean you bought a car today? While I was gone, you didn't go to work like you said? You bought a brand new car?" Their mother was 57 years old and overweight by 40 pounds. She had dyed brown hair and was dressed in her work clothes, a black suit with a cream-colored blouse. On her feet were thick wool socks. She put the electric blanket over Kenny's legs, moved closer to him, and kept her hand tied around his wrist. "I didn't tell you because I knew you'd get upset. But I've been looking to get a new car for a long time, you know that. And those guys at Toyota of Portland, they're nice. They're not slimy at all. So I set up an appointment, and they had the one I wanted. I didn't even have to put money down, not a cent. And my payments aren't as bad as you'd think. They even gave me $1,500 for the Saturn, and as you know, that car was a death trap. The brakes were given out, and it didn't steer right. It needed new tires, too. The guys at Schwab said I shouldn't even be driving it. How much was it? It was a good deal. How much? With everything in the better warranty, $39,000. Lynette sat on a wooden chair next to the front door. She covered her face with her hands, and her heart began racing. I'm really confused. We're supposed to sign the papers on the house next week. Is it going to screw up the loan? Did you think about the loan? Their mother shook her head. I remember when he wanted us to buy this house for $90,000, and now he wants $300,000? Well, he has a lot of nerve. It was 15 years ago when he said $90,000. That was a long time ago. And he's selling it to us for $280,000. He's taking $20,000 off what he's going to be listing it for if he puts it on the market. Plus, we're not going through realtors, so we're saving even more. It's a really good deal, and you know it. I told you last week, the blue house down the street sold for over $400,000. Well, that place is a hell of a lot nicer and not on the freeway. I know, but still, Jesus, why would you buy a car today? Well, I've wanted one for a long time, said their mother. So finally, I just decided to buy one. That's it? You didn't think about how it'll affect us getting the house? You didn't think about the loan? But their mother didn't answer. Kenny wanted to get up from the couch, but she wouldn't let him. Don't you want to still buy the house? Asked Lynette. I guess I'll stop there.
Don't you still want to buy the house? There's a loaded question, right, Willie?
Yeah. I think I started the book with the idea of how expensive it's getting to live in cities like Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, even my hometown of Reno. The housing prices are so out of whack with minimum wage increases, and so now that I've lived in Portland for 25 years, and just watching the explosion of growth here, I just wanted to write a book about a struggling working class family that has to navigate housing prices going up over four times to what. Minimum wage is barely doubled in the time.
Right. I can just picture this house and where it is against I-5. And this story, Lynette is the main character, and she's not really that young anymore. She's in her 30s, right?
Yeah. And she just turned 30.
Yeah. And I think about these what I consider kids. This book goes by really fast. It's really fast paced and it's very intense. Did you on purpose kind of condense it into this short amount of time and make things happen so quickly for them?
Well, yeah. I was really interested in that idea. I'm one of those guys that I have a little office in a part of Portland called St. John's. And there's all these really cool, 1930s, 1940s kind of craftsman sort of houses that were built for the workers in that area. And I'm one of those guys that falls in love with houses. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, oh, I'd love to live there and I'd love to live in that one. And what I started noticing when I would, being a writer, I spend a lot of time stuck and walking around, and what I noticed is all the dream houses I'd fall in love with, they were always, in my life, they were always like $50,000 out of my range. So you'd go, I think I could afford this amount, and then it'd go for sale, and it'd be $50,000 more. And what I realized when I was walking through St. John's is these really beat-up houses that used to be affordable for me or just out of my reach were suddenly $100,000 more than you thought they should have been. Mm-hmm. And then you started seeing all these local businesses like mom-and-pop stores being torn down and then apartment buildings being put up in their place. Just from my office window, I can see six apartment buildings that have gone up in the last 6 years. And three of the businesses from my window are closed because they're waiting for permits to tear them down and build something bigger. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted the story to have a panic feel because it just felt so panicky. If your income has stayed stagnant and all of a sudden everything around you is getting really expensive and being torn down, it feels panic because You can't change who you are and how you make your money that quickly. And all of a sudden, everything around you is changing. And so I intentionally made it a really intense and real panicky. It's that idea that you're still walking down the street and everyone around you, all your neighbors, your friends, all have cars. And you can't figure out how they afforded a car and how they're driving, but you're still walking. And that is panic-inducing, I think. And so I wanted the novel kind of dipped in that feel.
Well, I really felt the plot just pushing this. And you know, usually you talk about the arc of a plot arc, but this felt more like a spiral of survival. That's how I felt. And the spiral was going down. And I think I was really worried. What do you think about that idea of the spiral instead of the arc?
Well, you know, that's where you mentioned noir. I've always been a fan of noir because I've always felt noir was, it's desperate writers, like the writers are kind of desperate and damaged, writing about damaged people. And noir is not necessarily about crime. It's about people in desperate situations being tested often. And so it does feel like a spiral. And I, you know, on another level, I was thinking a lot about, you know, gentrification and that ideal of the American dream, and of that working class people deserve and have the opportunity to own something.
Mm-hmm.
And so all that was kind of layered inside this really panicky noir kind of influence book.
Yeah, Lynette, she's really a decent person, but, you know, she gets herself into really horrific, I won't give away, situations in this book. But it's so amazing. She only wants what she's owed. So where did her character come from? Did you know women like her, or did you read something? How did you let Lynette get evolved in your mind?
Well, one idea I had when I started the book was I just wanted to pick, like, one kind of dysfunctional working-class family. Like, if you walked into a grocery store, like, you go into a Safeway and you're just walking down the freezer aisle and you see three families, you just pick one and you say, okay, all of a sudden we're going to change the rules and we're going to change how much rents are. And this city you live in is going to explode in gentrification. And can you handle it? So I wanted a family that was basically could duct tape their life on a good day. They were kind of duct taping their way through life. And so Lynette, I wanted a person that has really struggled in her life. She's struggled mentally. She's been a caregiver to her brother since she was a little girl, so she's been raised kind of almost as a servant to her brother more than a daughter and a kid. And so she has a pretty big edge to her when we meet her. And I wanted to say, hey, look, here's this person she's trying her hardest to do something decent, or what she thinks is decent, buying this house. But she's got a lot of baggage and weight, too, and she's trying to jump on this gentrification train, and she's trying to make the leap so she can stay in her neighborhood. But can she do it?
Mm-hmm.
So I was interested in her on all these different levels. And I guess the last thing was I was really interested in that idea of powerlessness, where I think she was raised with giving everything to her brother and helping her mom, and she doesn't have a real solid sense of self. And so some people in that situation implode, but I was really interested in the effects of a person that explodes when they get really stressed out or when their life becomes too much. And when you meet Lynette, she's trying to not be that person. She's trying not to be a person that explodes all the time. But she's left a carnage behind her and a lot of damage behind her, and you're seeing the effects of that between her and her mother.
Right. It's pretty incredible the way her story unfolds in the book. We're talking to Willie Vlotten, and he wrote The Night Always Comes, Don't Skip Out on Me. He's a Penn Faulkner finalist and an ALA Notable Book Award. And for those of you who don't know, that's American Library Association. So, Willie, we were talking about the main character, Lynette, and how her character develops over the course of the book. You find out more about her and why she's so desperate. It kind of becomes a crime novel in a way, and a page-turner for sure. And you found out, like, you know, women that work in cafes and bars have two or three jobs, and that's her. Bless, she has this added burden of her developmentally disabled adult brother. So that's what how the story rolls out. Tell us a little bit more about you and your writing life. You've written six novels now, and you've also been the front of a band or two. Tell us about your life and how you ended up being a writer, and where do you write? What's it like?
You know, I started writing songs as a, 10 or 11. My brother was kind of a folk songwriter in high school, and I did everything he did. He was an older brother. And so I just started writing songs as a little kid. I think I had a big edge on me, even, I was a sad little kid, and writing songs just felt right to me. So I wrote songs until I guess I was about 18. And then for some reason, I just wanted to disappear more. And I was obsessed with novels and movies. And I went through a phase where I didn't find any books I liked, and I couldn't find any movies I really liked. And so I just sat down one day and just started writing a story. I never thought of doing that before, really. But I'd written, I wrote folk kind of story songs, like I said, since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I just started one day and wrote a novel, and just for fun. And I really liked it because, when you're in a bad band, you bother everybody. You bother your mom if you're practicing at her place. You bother, as I got older, if you live in a house, you bother your roommates. You bother everybody when you're in a bad band. And with writing, you don't bother anybody. And so I got really addicted to the work ethic of it and the disappearing of it I loved. And I loved that it wasn't a performance. You could fail at it over and over. All you had to do but you could fix anything. You could just edit and fix. And so I loved it.
Oh, so do you write mostly in the day or mostly at night?
Well, I always had jobs, so I just wrote whenever I could. In my 20s, I used to quit jobs and then write a novel. But see, I didn't tell anybody I wrote novels because I was so insecure about being in a band. Like, I was always in struggling bands my whole life, and so I didn't want to put that same kind of pressure on writing. So in my 20s, I quit three different jobs over the course of all my 20s and to write novels that I never sent out or showed to anybody. I mean, it wasn't the best plan, but so I just wrote for fun. So I'd write before work, I'd write after work. Like I said, I'd quit jobs to write. And so it wasn't until I was maybe 35 and my band started doing better and I started getting noticed, I guess, for my band and the lyrics in my songs, and then a publisher. I met an agent, and I had, by then, I think, four novels. But one was good, I thought was good, and I gave that to the agent, and that was called The Motel Life, and they sold that one, and then after that, I've just been kind of writing full time.
Right. The Motel Life, that was made into a movie as well. And
yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah.
I remember, I didn't know anything about the publishing world either, and I remember when I sold the book, it takes 2 years for it to come out. And I remember calling my agent, who's still my agent after 20 years or whatever, and I called her and I said, "Hey, do you think you're going to go broke before the book comes out?" Because I was so scared before I sent a book off. I was too scared that I was bad at it, and nobody tries consistently hard year after year if they know they're bad. But then I guess at 35, I started having that dream that my book could maybe be in the library next to the other books.
Oh.
And that kind of gave me the confidence to send a book out. And then before it got published, I was so scared that it wouldn't get published. I used to call her every 3 months and ask if the publisher had gone broke yet.
Oh, man.
Were they really going to put my book out? So,
tell our audience, it's about two brothers, and there's a bike accident. It happens in Reno. It's set in Reno. And the relationship between these two brothers. And it's incredible. A good, great story. And then also, Lean on Pete. I want to talk about that because somewhere in your life, horses are important to you too. So this is about horse racing and another boy. It's set in the Pacific Northwest. Tell us a little bit about Lean on Pete.
Well, when I moved to Portland from Reno, I was 27, and Portland was the biggest city I'd ever lived in, and I really struggled. I worked at a graveyard shift at a trucking company, and I didn't know anybody. But Portland was kind of an art city, you know, and had bands, and there was real writers here, and so I took the chance to move up here. But I was so homesick, I was really struggling, and I really wanted to move back home. So to keep myself in Portland, I started going to all the places that reminded me of Reno, and the main one that brought me the most comfort was Portland Meadows, the horse track. So I started, when I wasn't working, I spent all my time at the track, and I wrote a lot of stories out there, you know, because it's a place that could hold 10,000 people, and there was 150 to 400 people there on a given day.
Right.
And so I just sat out there and wrote stories, but the problem with me in horse racing, and I love to gamble on horses, but the problem with me in horse racing is I fall in love with horses, and there was some really cool jockeys that I started getting crushes on at Portland Meadows, and watching the jockeys get hurt and the horses getting hurt, being put down or just being sold.
Mm.
After 10 years of it, I started researching more and more about these horses I'd fall in love with. Mm. And it got too much for me. So Lean on Pete's really me breaking up with horse racing. And so I wrote a novel about a kid who works at a horse track to try to get my head around quitting going to the track.
Yeah, just poured your heart about these horses into this book. Well, that's another.
Oh yeah, I mean I own an old Portland Meadows racehorse.
Right now.
So yeah, I'm the sucker that. You know, I really fell in love with these horses, and it's a bad thing if you like.
Do you have to board him, or do you have a place big enough to have him out back?
Yeah, no, I have three horses on my property. Me and my wife do. She's the real cow gal. I mean, she's a really good horse person. I'm just a fan, and we live outside of Portland in a town called Scappoose, and. We have three horses living in our backyard.
Hey, happy ending, Willie. That is really cool. And so you're able to afford a house in Scappoose with room for horses. And that's a great story. So
I got lucky there.
Yeah, yeah. So the band's also, Richmond Fontaine is a band which plays kind of alt country. And that, you made the soundtrack for another book. Don't Skip Out on Me. Did I say that right?
Yeah. So when I moved to Portland, the band I got in was called Richmond Fontaine, and we were together 23 years, I think. And then right when, so we retired, we played mostly in Europe. We toured maybe 3-4 months a year in Europe. And then we decided to call it a day with the band, and then right after we called it a day, I'd written all these songs, instrumental songs, for a book called Don't Skip Out on Me, because that book felt so much like music, and Horace Hopper was such a sad character that I wrote all these instrumental songs. So I got the band back together, and we did a soundtrack to it, like a pedal steel instrumental record, which is probably the favorite thing I've ever done.
Wow.
I guess. And then with this new book, for the paperback edition, you get a free soundtrack to my new band, The Delines, which is kind of more like a country soul ballad band. I write the songs, but a woman named Amy Boone is the singer, and she's really amazing.
Right. We're going to go out with a song from that album, The Delines, and I have to say these are noir ballads, and fit the book very well. And so, Willie, thanks so much for being here on Book Lovers Cafe today. You spun quite a tale for us. And
thank you.
Today we were talking to Willie Vallotton, and he is the author of his latest book, The Night Always Comes, The Motel Life, Lean on Pete, and Don't Skip Out on Me, and a couple other ones as well. And you've been listening to Book Lovers Cafe, a program for everyone who hasn't read everything. And please join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to past shows and other programs from the podcast page on the website, kptz.org, and you can make a donation to the station as well. Thank you to the engineer and editors, Taylor Clark and Sonny Flores, and all the volunteers and supporters who make this wonderful radio station possible. See you next time.
Today's closing music is Waiting on the Blue by Willie Vallotton's band, The DeLines. Their album, The Imperial, is available at bandcamp.com.
I know the night will end. Oh, I know the night will end soon. But I just get so weary waiting on the blue. Garbage trucks will start banging, delivery trucks. Saved once again.